I think that, you know, people got to know that if whether you know the law or you don't know the law, if you flaunt the law, it's going to be answered by a serious consequences.
But you're not telling your campaign workers to intimidate voters. You're not doing that.
I think that's a ridiculous question. Of course not. Of course not. So, hey, I appreciate the opportunity to be on this morning. Hopefully we can do it again next week.
So I have a very good working relationship with Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim. And in our pretty regular interviewing slot this week, this is how it ended, very abruptly. And I had no idea that hours later, a news report was going to drop in regards to four more people charged with being tied back to absentee ballot scandals. Really, the absentee ballot scandal of the 2023 Bridgeport Democratic mayoral primary in the city of Bridgeport. As we reported, the charges went to Robert Anderson, Maria Hernandez, Elsie Mercado, and Sylvia Ramos. And as if that wasn't enough, we then learned a day later that three of those people, the arrest warrants filed against the four, three of them that were charged, say they were working for and paid by Mayor Joe Ganim's campaign. And I have to give kudos where kudos belong. The investigative work that has gone on with Connecticut Mirror, but specifically people like Andrew Brown, is amazing. This is the kind of journalism you should be watching, reading, looking out for, especially when it comes to Connecticut matters. And so Andrew Brown joins us now. He again, once again, in this saga, I call it the Bridgeport election saga that keeps going on. He again broke this news and joins us now. So, Andrew, I'm not going to reveal to people how you get these stories and you discover it. I do know you constantly have an ear to the ground when it comes to Bridgeport. I want to remind folks why you've taken such an interest in the Bridgeport elections and the 2023, specifically the 2023 primary mayoral election.
I think it's a pretty simple answer, and that is that it's not every day that a major election for mayor in the largest city in the state is overturned in court. You know, the videos that emerged after the 2023 primary set off really a chain of events that has made it a national news story. We're talking about the largest city in Connecticut, its municipal elections being essentially, there's accusations that the entire system is a fraud. So we're now at a point where we have nine different individuals who have been charged within one way or another manipulating the absentee voting system in Bridgeport. And I think any news reporter would set off alarms that that is a big story.
I agree. And I think you do a really great job, Andrew. And I appreciate that you don't drop this because, honestly, in today's news world, people will do the surface work and then they're going to move on, especially to more of, I would call it, the louder headlines, especially coming out of Washington, D.C. And to me, these are the stories that matter. And if you don't stay on top of them, nothing changes. So let's talk about your most recent articles and what you have revealed. I'm curious. So the last time you and I spoke was actually back in February when we knew that five people, as you mentioned, were facing election fraud charges dating back to this same exact mayoral election, this primary election. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting, and you and I had kind of talked about this, was whether or not Mayor Ganim was going to be compromised in this. Was he ever going to have to defend himself in court? Was he going to have to answer to anything? This is the first time, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we're actually hearing people say, wait a minute, I'm not going down without saying why I did this. I mean, they're alleging that Mayor Ganim paid them, or his campaign paid them, to do the actions that they're now being accused of.
Yes. And I would say that some of them are admitting that they were paid by the Ganim campaign. But the investigators, I think the more interesting thing is that criminal investigators with the chief state's attorney's office are now scrutinizing Mayor Ganim's campaign finance reports from the 2023 election cycle. In two of the most recent arrest warrants for Elsie Mercado and Sylvia Ramos, they went in and obtained Ganim's campaign finance reports and noted in the criminal complaints, essentially their arrest warrants, the affidavits, that both of those women received checks out of the campaign finance account for Ghanem during the 2023 election. That's new. And investigators in one of those cases went so far, in Elsie Mercado's cases, went so far as to write in the criminal complaint that one of the voters told them that Mercado, while she was signing people up to vote absentee, was essentially shoulder to shoulder with Ghanem in their apartment complex. So it's becoming a little harder for them. I didn't get to talk to the mayor, but it's becoming a little harder for the mayor to try to distance himself from some of this when the campaign is cutting checks to these people.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I want to also make note, because it's not like John Gomes hasn't also been somewhat compromised in this. I mean, I do need to note that in your report, you do say that one of the workers, you know, state prosecutors claiming that Maria Hernandez, who is one of the four this week, was running for a city council seat and illegally collected two voters absentee ballots while working in conjunction with John Gomes, who was, again, the challenger. And we have heard John Gomes's name come up, to be candid. We have heard his name come up a couple of times, whether that was also alleged absentee ballot stuffing, harvesting. We have heard his name come up as well. So it hasn't all come from the Ghanem. But I would say overwhelmingly, it's been connected back to the Ghanem campaign. And so I guess my question would be to you, Andrew, is do you see Mayor Ghanem potentially facing charges soon?
Oh, I couldn't say one way or the other. That's up to prosecutors and the investigators to follow the evidence here, right? I wouldn't presume to make that assumption. All I can do is read and report what is in the complaints and the arrest warrants that have been filed to this point. And I would note that it in the most recent arrest warrants, it's not just Mayor Ghanem's name who comes up. Prominently in Sylvia Ramos's arrest warrant, Ramos told investigators, according to what they wrote in the affidavit, that she had collected one or two absentee ballots in Bridgeport. And when they asked her what she did with those, she informed investigators that she provided those absentee ballots to Anita Martinez, who is a sitting city councilwoman. Ms. Martinez has not been charged to this point, and she denied that that was true whenever I got her on the phone yesterday. But the point being is that some of the allegations in the criminal complaints are essentially pointing towards other people who may be vulnerable to criminal charges here.
Chatting with another local journalist who I admire and I think does a lot of really great investigative work here in our great state of Connecticut, that is Andrew Brown of CT Mirror, and he joins us with the very latest in what I like to call the Bridgeport election fraud saga that just keeps on giving, it feels like. Andrew Brown, I know we were just discussing sort of, it's hard to say what will happen next, certainly. But there are now a lot of conversations around more election reform. Now, I do know in this last session there was focus on this, but it was mostly on having more cameras installed at every drop box and having more training as to how we operate them, release the footage, what have you. But there are calls from some people to have more reforms in place. For example, your article that just came out this week, it says it is legal in Connecticut for candidates, campaign workers, and political party members to distribute applications for absentee ballots. But the arrest warrants allege that the actions of the political operatives in the city went beyond that. So to your first point here, does that need to be tailored? Should people have to request their absentee ballots versus just freely getting them? Because those interactions are kind of what's in question. What is being said to voters before they then fill out those ballots and then potentially even don't know the laws on the books and give it back to the operatives?
To your question, there is some effort at the state capitol to change who can sign up people to vote absentee. And I want to make a big differentiation here. it is legal for people to assist people in requesting a ballot. Once that ballot arrives at people's homes or apartments, that is when the process changes, and it is up to the voter to fill out that ballot and return it.
Mm-hmm.
If other people outside of it, say a family member, in many cases, assist a voter in filling out the ballot or returning it to the town clerk, that's illegal. That is where these charges are coming from, in which operatives allegedly picked up people's ballots, what is commonly referred to as harvesting, and returning them to the town clerk's office or to a drop box. The effort in Connecticut, one of the things that was considered this year, was implementing essentially a 12-year ban on anyone who is convicted of an election-related crime. They would be banned for up to 12 years after their sentence from distributing AB applications, also candidate petitions, which people need to fill out in order to get onto a ballot during an election. And so that went through the legislature. There seemed to be bipartisan support for that. But when it came down to the final days of the legislative session, the Senate never moved and the House never moved on that legislation, meaning it just failed by sitting there. I wrote a story earlier this year. There was a lot of finger pointing as to who was to blame for that. Republicans pointing to the Democrats, who are in control of the legislature, and Democrats kind of saying, you know, we just didn't come to an agreement on this, or we couldn't get both chambers to agree to take it up. So that ultimately didn't go anywhere. And so the laws remain the same.
Let me ask you something, Andrew Brown, because this is something that also is troubling. And again, I don't have any concrete information, but I could tell you, much like the work that you do, there's a lot going on behind the scenes for I'm kind of digging into still the release of that video in 2023, which, by the way, is really where this all started. The video, the infamous video that ended up going national, where you see who we've now identified as Wanda Jeter Pataki stuffing something into ballot boxes. And by the way, one of the four who are now facing charges is also seen in that video helping to stuff something in the ballot boxes. But I digress. I want to know, as we bolster more of these installed video cameras at every drop box, who gets access to that footage?
These are public security cameras. I wouldn't presume to say whether somebody might not give access to the public or to journalists if they requested it, right? That would be an argument for the Freedom of Information Act in Connecticut. But these videos should be public. The reason that the legislature required cameras to be placed on them post-2023 was to provide a sense of transparency around who is going to the drop boxes. But I will just note as well that it's also legal in Connecticut still for to put a stamp on a absentee ballot and return it. So people, operatives, if they did want to do this, they don't need to go to the drop boxes.
Well, and so my point kind of is, you know, first of all, that it doesn't do enough to just monitor the drop boxes. But, you know, the thing I'm digging into is, and again, I'm not going to reveal anything until I have concrete information, but the aftermath of this video being released and the people in the city of Bridgeport who have been scrutinized and, quite frankly, possibly punished for getting that video public, I really don't understand. Because isn't that the point of why these cameras are out there, is so that the public can have transparency, so that if there were crimes being committed, they're caught on camera and we have proof? That's the whole point. And so to me, I want to understand if, in fact, there were people who are having consequences for releasing that video, why that was allowed. But a bigger point is, you put all these cameras in state of Connecticut, and I want to know, why don't we have a feed, for example, that's public? Why people can't just watch that? Because I don't even think the voters in Bridgeport or even the state of Connecticut have faith that, you know, the police are going to comb through it, or that city council is going to comb through it, or the city workers are going to comb through it. I think they would like to know that they can actually watch that video, and it's not just a deterrent. if you get my point. And so I don't know if that's something that's being discussed in this reform, but if we're going to spend the money on installing all these cameras at every Dropbox, then we should, as you said, make it as public accessible as possible.
I have not spent a lot of my time as a reporter thinking about or looking into how the video was ultimately released in 2023, purely because I think that my time was better spent trying to understand what actually transpired that led to that video. Those were public security cameras. They were city owned, meaning they ultimately, at the end of the day, are a public resource. And I think that there's a very good argument that they were a public record. So to spend time trying to figure out who released what I would say is a public record, it was not my main focus.
And I'm glad. I think now that we're about 2 years out from when this happened, I'm learning that there were potentially people who were basically punished, even though this is, as you mentioned, basically public record. So why they even had to be given consequences is beyond me. So that's sort of something else. But to your point, yes, absolutely tackling how this could even be and what happens to the people who have allegedly done these things. I'm glad that you've focused on that. And Andrew Brown, I have a feeling this is not the last of our conversations on this. Again, thank you for the excellent reporting that you do. It is CT Mirror. I'm certainly going to link your latest story to this podcast on voiceofct.com. And as I mentioned, Andrew, we will talk again very soon, I'm sure.